Chapter 23. Onyx. The leopard leapt off the shack, and in that split second, I thought it would attack Zahar. She stood with her back to it as she smiled at us, unaware of the danger rushing toward her. I heard her say something about a djinn, but I was already running towards her. I dove for Zahar and knocked her to the ground, out of reach of the leopard's giant claws. I rolled back up into a low fighting stance, pulling my sword from its sheath as I positioned myself between Zahar and the leopard, unleashing a menacing snarl. But standing where I expected to see a ferocious beast was a tall, slender woman. She straightened herself after her landing and shook her head, causing strands of colorful dreadlocks to swish back and forth to obscure her face. She drew her head back, and the dreads fell behind her. They were so long they almost touched the ground. Many of the colored strands sported wooden and clay beads that made a soft tinkling sound as the djinn moved her head alluringly. Her skinny face almost came to a point at her chin, and shining out from her dark face were golden, glowing eyes, the very same ones the leopard had. The djinn wore tight-fitting blue fabric wrapped around her chest, leaving the dark skin of her arms and midriff exposed. I noticed several white tattoos etched up and down that skin. Around her waist was a golden belt, and long strips of sheer blue fabric fell down around her bare legs. She looked around at all of us, and then to Zahar, the one who had discovered her identity. The djinn turned her head from side to side, inspecting Zahar. She walked towards her, and reached a jeweled hand towards our sorceress. Her multiple golden rings and bracelets clanged together as she placed a hand on Sahara's face. I still stood at the ready.
"Ah, you are powerful indeed,"
the djinn said in a thick, accented, and sultry voice.
"We have been searching for you, djinn,"
Sahara responded in her own smooth tones as she removed the djinn's hand from her face. But instead of letting the djinn go, Sahara held on.
"We need your help. We have something to offer in return, of course."
"Oh?"
The djinn breathed as a distinct glint flashed across her eyes.
"I cannot resist a good offer. Come, you are all welcome."
The djinn, still holding Sahar's hand, floated towards the ladder leading up into the shack. The rest of us looked back and forth at each other, but as Zahar ascended into the house after the strange woman, I figured we had no other option. I was beyond tired anyway. I climbed up the ladder, wondering how all nine of us were going to fit in the shack, but when I pulled myself up into the room, it appeared much bigger and nicer than it did from the outside. The interior boasted many plush carpets spanning the floor, and several colorful silks hung on the walls. I wondered if all mysterious entities had this type of taste in decor. Different trinkets hung down from the ceiling and sat on shelves and tables next to hundreds of bottles of liquids, boxes of herbs, jars of dead specimens, and other strange items. The shack looked like a strange combination of Sahar's lab and Katala's infirmary mixed with, well, the decor of someone who lived in a jungle and collected any and everything she could find.
"Make yourselves at home,"
the djinn said when we were all in the shack. She closed a trap door over the hole where the ladder was, and she waved a hand. A clicking sound came from the door, and I realized she had locked us in. Maybe it was to keep the wandering undead out. Or maybe it was to keep us all in. I glanced at Zahar, wondering if the djinn should worry us, but she looked right at home as she sat on the carpet and inspected some jars nearby. So, I settled in as much as my warrior instincts would allow me to. This djinn was who Zahar had wanted to locate even before our trip south, and she had mentioned the djinn may be able to help with Kristoff's powers. So I figured if nothing else, she would be our ally. Jace and Lynx immediately found a corner of the room and threw their packs down. They tore off most of their armor and then found suitable places on the carpeted floor to curl up for sleep. I figured they had earned it, since they had done most of the trailblazing through the jungle with their machetes. I liked the two shapeshifters. They were tough, and got down to business, just like I did. We hadn't spoken much to each other, but that's probably because we were all so similar. Trained fighters bound to our queens. The council and I shrugged off our own packs and each found comfy places on the floor. The djinn shuffled around in some cabinets and then placed a large bowl of berries in the middle of the room. She motioned toward it and tossed a couple of the red berries into her mouth to show us they were okay to eat. I crawled over the bowl, grabbed a handful, and slowly popped the juicy berries into my mouth.
My name is Jasmina,
the djinn offered after we had all grabbed some fruit and settled into our various places on the floor.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Jasmina,
Rosmarin offered in her kind yet royal voice.
We appreciate you letting us stay here for the night,
Erwin added, sitting with her back propped up against a table. I definitely wasn't looking forward to sleeping in the elements with all the bugs and snakes around. Kristoff shivered as he thought about all the crawling creatures that might have found us if we slept outside. Erwin had managed to scare him good when she told him about all the snakes that called the jungle home. I silently laughed. Jasmina snapped her head around when she heard him speak, and in a second her skinny face was 2 inches from his.
What are you?
Jasmina asked as she kneeled down and reached up to his face. The moment she touched his skin, she recoiled as if she had been burnt.
What power flows through you?
He blinked at the djinn, as we all did. Not only could she sense his powers, but somehow she could feel them.
That's part of why we were looking for you,
Sahar stepped in.
We know next to nothing about the Lightbearer's powers.
Jasmina crawled away from him like a giant spider. She curled her knees up to her chest and rocked back and forth, making me question her sanity. Maybe this djinn had gone crazy living out in the jungle all alone. But still, she could sense Kristoff's powers, so maybe she had some answers. We sat in silence, all eyes on the djinn as she continued rocking and mumbling to herself. Then she craned her head sideways so she could see Sahar sitting cross-legged behind her.
Why are you all here?
She crooned at Sahar.
You let us in,
Rachel shot back, clearly having little patience for this strange being.
Why are you all here? In the jungle?
Jasmina repeated, stressing her last words.
Queen Sophia has sent us to explore the ruins. We think something or someone is building an army of the dead. Do you know anything about that?
A hint of accusation filled Rosmarin's voice, but she did her best to be diplomatic.
Yes, yes, more of the dead have been in the jungle. They overrun the ruins.
Jasmina's voice trailed off oddly, and then she simply uttered,
"The ruins."
Do you know what is in the ruins? I questioned her.
The dead. They flow from the ruins like water. Yes. Some power hides in there.
Jasmina spoke, her words even more cryptic than Sahar's visions.
We need to offer her something worthwhile before we expect coherent answers from her.
Rachel grumbled. We hadn't talked about what we could give the djinn. I think we had all forgotten about her until Sahar reminded us she wanted to find her. She had only ever mentioned that we'd have to make the spirit some kind of deal. Kristoff assumed gold was the correct thing to offer, and as King of Constanta, he had plenty to go around.
How much gold do you want?
He asked. Jasmina fell backward and cackled uncontrollably. After a minute of her fit, she pulled herself back up to a sitting position with her dreadlocks splayed out behind her.
You've never met a djinn before, have you, Lightbearer?
I can't say that I have. He smiled guiltily at the strange woman.
I do love gold,
Jasmina continued.
But gold is so boring. Everyone who meets a djinn only offers gold, and I have a lifetime's worth. I need something of value.
Rachel scoffed at that, and I imagined her thoughts mirrored mine.
Jasmina apparently had received so much gold that she no longer considered it worth anything. Although, glancing around the odd shack, I would never guess she had any money to speak of. She probably had it all stashed away somewhere.
Djinns are not genies, you know?
Jasmina scolded.
We aren't here to grant your pitiful wishes or to tell you all the answers to the universe. We have powers, but like all things, that power comes at a price.
Her words reminded me of that day when zombies overran Constanta. We all fought to the best of our abilities, but Kristoff had summoned all the strength he could and released his powers to save the kingdom. But it had cost him his life. While he came back from that, a phoenix from the ashes, there was no guarantee that he would the next time he had to pay that price.
I see you know something about that.
Jasmina stared at him intently. By now, I could almost see the steam rising off Rachel. She was tired and covered in sweat, and the last thing that vampire wanted to do was listen to a djinn's riddles.
What is it you could want?
She yelled at Jasmina. The djinn twirled one of her green dreadlocks in her tattooed fingers. She sucked on her bottom lip, and then those yellow eyes darted back to Chris. I don't know if it was due to exhaustion or something else, but I saw the djinn's skin become almost see-through.
I want what only you can offer.
She pointed a long finger at the light-bearer. His brow furrowed as he looked at her. He looked from Rosmarin to Rachel, then to Erwin and me, and all of us had similar baffled looks on our faces. Except Sahar. Jasmina laughed again, a shrill laugh that grated against my bones.
A mighty power flows through you,
Jasmina declared.
I've never encountered it before. I want it.
He shook his head. Even if I wanted to give you any of my power, I have no clue how. I barely even know how to control it, and the first time I used it, it killed me.
Yes, the power of life and death. A funny thing.
Jasmina giggled.
I believe it would be possible to siphon some of your light to her.
Sahar commented.
Remember, in the lab, we were able to use a simple spell to divert some of your energies into our hands. We probably couldn't have controlled it, but it proved to me that it's safely transferable. You felt his power?
Rosmarin wondered as she looked at Jasmina.
When you touched him?
I did. I can tell you things about his powers, and those ruins. But first, you must agree to the offer.
With that, Jasmina stood up and wandered to another corner of the room, leaving the council to make yet another difficult decision. Is this really a good idea? Kristoff questioned us all. The council moved toward him so we could speak in hushed voices. With her help, we could easily infiltrate the ruins and maybe stop whatever is in there. I argued. I had to agree with Sahar. We would need all the help we could get to fight a horde of zombies and lichlings.
But when this djinn has some of Kristoff's power, what will she do with it? What if she uses it to take control of the army? To destroy Nahuatl?
Rachel's distrust of the djinn may have stemmed from annoyance, but her concern was justified.
Does she seem capable of that?
Erwin wondered. Rachel rolled her eyes at her.
Don't fall for her act.
Sahar let out a long breath as she thought about all the possibilities.
What's on your mind, friend?
Rosmarin coaxed the sorceress to speak.
Whether or not we have her help, we will soon discover for ourselves what hides in those ruins.
She reasoned.
So, in that sense, her information is useless to us. Then let's be on our way.
Rachel growled. I looked at Sahar with tender and understanding eyes. Out of all of us, I probably had the most compassion and patience for the sorceress, and I most understood her often mysterious ways. But you want the djinn's powers on our side. I stated, as if I had discerned the words from Sahar's mind. Sahar smiled at me and nodded. Then her voice turned serious.
We all know something is in the ruins. We can feel it. That silent fear has been creeping into all of our thoughts and dreams. We need Jasmina if we hope to fight back against whatever is lurking in the dark.
I didn't know if Sahar saw something or if she simply was using her intuition, but it didn't matter to me. I trusted her, maybe more than I trusted anyone. Jasmina was strange, that much was true, but she clearly wanted Kristoff's power, something no one else could offer her. If he let her have some of his light, maybe she would befriend us. If djinns could do such things, then we would have her on our side.
I think we should trust her.
Erwin chimed in. All eyes turned to her as her small yet confident voice broke through our thoughts.
She seems mysterious, but like Sahar said, she's a djinn, a spirit that doesn't entirely fit the mold of our ways. I don't sense any kind of deceit from her. Plus, Sahar trusts her, right?
Erwin's bright eyes turned to our sorceress. Rather than answering, Ari, Sahar turned to Chris and stated,
Just so you're aware, a promise with a djinn is soul-binding. If you break it, your soul will belong to Jasmina.
If I make her a promise, I don't intend to break it. He replied, I agree with Ari and Sahar. I think the djinn will surely help us, and we need it. I added, for what it was worth. It was yet another big decision looming over us, and although a part of me agreed with Rachel and feared Jasmina could use the Lightbearer's power for something bad, or even against us, I trusted Erwin's intuition. The fairy had an uncanny ability to sense things in people that others couldn't see. Not like how Sahar could sense things with magic, but in a simple sort of way. And Erwin was right. Sahar gave no opposition to the idea, so I assumed she saw something we couldn't see. And to me, that counted for a lot. Okay, let's do it. Chris concluded.
Are you sure about this?
Rosmarin questioned him with concern on her face. What choice do we really have? He asked back.
We don't need the djinn's help.
Rachel countered.
I think you do.
Jasmina surprised us as she now stood over our group, smiling down on us. Rachel glared at the djinn, but everyone else nodded their agreement. We all crawled back to our previous spots on the floor, and I thought about the decision one more time. It could prove to be the worst mistake we've ever made, or the best, to ally with Jasmina. But Sahar's consent was what gave me the most confidence.
All right. Kristoff agreed. In exchange for your help, I offer you some of my power.
Good.
Jasmina replied as she sat back down. I expected her to place a hand on him then and there and transfer the light, but she didn't. We all stared at her until she felt our eyes on us. Well, are you going to do it? I asked as Jasmina appeared to be in no rush to siphon Kristoff's power.
You are all very eager. But then again, you have no Atl to save, don't you? I will help you. First, I will tell you what I know about the ruins. Then, when the time comes, you will let me have some of those powers. This you must promise.
Jasmina's eyes glowed brighter as she gazed at the Lightbearer. She stuck her hand out toward him, and I could see the floor through it. I promise. He reached out and grabbed the djinn's hand. I half expected him to grab thin air, but her hand materialized into a firm grasp. Blue steam rose up from their hands as they shook. It looked like they were involved in some kind of strange arm wrestling, but soon the steam dissipated over their clasped hands and they released each other. Jasmina giggled and crawled back to her place on the carpet. Rosmarin slid over to Chris and inspected his hand. She traced her fingers along blue lines that had appeared on his palm. What's that? I asked as I watched her trace the lines.
A djinn's mark,
Sahar affirmed.
Now, with that out of the way, tell us what you know.
Rachel demanded.
Jasmina sat quietly for a moment, and as she stroked her long dreads, her eyes rolled back into her head, revealing the whites of her eyes. When she came to, she looked around the room as if she wasn't sure where she was. Then she spoke.
A spell has covered Tenochtitlan for many centuries, but it grows weak. The less hold the spell has over the ruins, the more evil the ruins draws to it.
So, that must be why zombies and lichlings are gathering there,
Rosmarin surmised.
But why is the spell weakening?
Erwin asked.
That I do not fully know,
Jasmina answered.
But in my experience, there is always someone behind the world's mysteries.
Like a djinn? Kristoff wondered.
Yes, sometimes, but not always.
Jasmina defended. You think someone is trying to break the spell? I made more of a statement than a question as I pieced together the djinn's words.
Yes. For a while now, it seems, someone has been meddling in the ruins, sending out the zombies and now lichlings to wreak havoc on the world.
Jasmina uttered. Rachel stood up.
You traded a piece of your power for that? We could have figured that much out on our own.
The vampire stomped off to a lonely corner of the room, and she threw herself down and turned her back to us before laying down to sleep. Jasmina simply shrugged off Rachel's actions, taking no offense. From what I could tell, nothing seemed to bother this spirit. I'm sure it was all in a djinn's nature.
Don't be afraid,
she motioned to Kristoff.
As long as my mark remains on your hand, our promise will remain. We are bound now, Lightbearer, and you have my powers at your disposal.
Rachel half turned to look back at the group as she listened to Jasmina's words. I hoped that had assuaged her reservations about the djinn enough.
Tomorrow we will discover what lies beneath Tenochtitlan, but for now, we sleep. And Lightbearer, we will train come morning.
Jasmina laid back and wrapped her dreadlocks around her like a blanket. We took her cue, and one by one we all found spots to stretch out. Jasmina extinguished the few dim lights and candles in her shack with a quick wave of her hand, and pure darkness covered the room.